Yes, I'm gonna just a bit of housekeeping to start. Now we're here having making jokes about the kashering we're all doing. Let's do a little bit of housekeeping on a few things. The first thing is I just wanted to make sure that you saw a few resources we have on the Hadar site. So there is this Pesach reader, which you can download. In color or in a printer-friendly form, which has essays from various Hadar teachers. Great. Maybe some of you had them mailed to your house. It looks very nice. Some of the things I spoke about this chapter are in the book as well. Also, just so you see, there's this whole page all about Pesach with things from the last few weeks of like the pre-Pesach mini yomi on Sunday. And the bite-sized insights into the Haggadah. And these are very important files, which are about the minimum laws of Pesach and the use of audio-video technology on Yom Tov from Rabbis Ethan Zucker and Aviva Richman. So yeah, so make sure to check them out if you haven't already. Yes, the bite size are up. I think except for today, but today will probably be up, or yesterday. I'm not sure if yesterday or today is up, but they will be up pretty soon. The other thing is, I don't know exactly what we're going to be doing next after Pesach. So we're taking a break. This is the last session, and before Pesach, and then after Pesach, I don't know what exactly is happening to this slot. You can certainly. Yeah, you could let people know if you want to continue. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. I'll have to talk about it and we'll. Oh, great. Perfect. Maybe there'll be a survey. Perfect. Great. So you'll hear from us if we're continuing and what we're going to continue to learn and who will be continuing. So well, that's all a bit up in the air right now. Okay, great. Great. So look out for the survey then if that's a thing happening. So look out for that. Okay, great. So just wanted to, we're just going to finish the chapter 10. There's not a lot to do. There's one kind of interesting side note that we can talk about for a second. Yeah, so we've been going through the steps of the Seder, though they don't have all of them that we have. The Mishnah doesn't mention Korech, for example, the Hillel sandwich. That's because it's not in the Mishnah. It's in later rabbinic literature. Yes, so we also don't have Tzafun. We're going to talk about that in a second. The Afikoman will come to. And the other thing we don't have is Nirtza. Nirtza is totally medieval. There's no pre-medieval roots to Nirtza. All the songs there are medieval. The core of the Seder and the Mishnah, as I explained last time, and you can see through the Mishnah, the core, of, and also in other historical sources, if you look at other accounts of Seders from the Second Temple period, the core of the Seder is pretty consistent. It's a high-end fancy meal telling the story of the Exodus and or learning the laws of Pesach, depending on exactly which emphasis you've got. You'll see something like that in a second. And thirdly, singing Hallel in some form. That's the core of the Mishnah Seder. So that's what you should also think about as the core of your Seder. And I also showed last time as the that the four cups are not a ritual requirement in the Mishnah, just the fourth cup is unusual for the Seder. All the other three would have been the normal cups you had for the three parts of a meal, for the appetizers, the main course, and the desserts. And the appetizers, wine goes with Kiddush, the main course one goes with Magid, and the dessert one goes with Birkat HaMazon. Great, and that was what this one was. So you can see this because the first three cups are part of the meal. You can drink as much as you want during that time, but the last, between the third and the fourth cup, there should be no drinking of wine. I just pasted the link in the thing. Okay, so we're going to continue on to the next very cryptic line that we're going to have to unpack by looking at a couple of sources. Okay, so great. Next Mishnah is might be surprising if you weren't expecting it, but ein maftirin achar ha-pesach afikoman. They do not conclude after the Pesach with an afikoman. This is surprising because that is literally what we do every Seder. We end with an Alfie Coleman. So you've probably heard a bunch of things about this, but I just want to talk through about what happened here for the Alfie Coleman very briefly. Also, this word maftirin, by the way, is not totally obvious what it means. It's normally used to mean like maftir, to have a haftarah, to have a reading of the prophets at the end of after a Torah reading. Doesn't actually get used in many other contexts, so it's not totally obvious what the word means here, but let's imagine it's sort of concluding, just like you would conclude the Torah reading with a reading from the prophet. Okay, so the Mishnah doesn't explain what Afikoman is. It assumes you know what an Afikoman is, so you have to look elsewhere to understand what it is. The Tosefta, which is a parallel collection to the Mishnah, I'm going to paste the link in the chat if you want to check it out. So this gives you one example of the Afikoman, though with one caveat that we'll see in a second. Ein maftirin achar ha-pesach Afikoman, kagon egozim tmarim uklayot. Gives three examples of what an Afikoman might be, which is nuts, dates, or roasted corns. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that is the sum total of what an Afikoman is. What it might mean is sort of like, here are things which are the core of what is forbidden about the Afikoman, if that makes sense. So as in like, so we're going to talk about that in a second, about the matzah connection. So yeah, so this is just what the Sefer says, that examples of things that you would not be able to conclude the Seder with are these three sort of desserty type dishes. The point, I think, seems to be, and this is not just me, this is other people as well. There's Josh Culp, he has a Haggadah over here. He goes through the origins of many of the Seder's customs. It's worth a read. He talks about, he suggests that these are three things that might have whetted the appetite for drinking. In other words, they're sort of part of a drunken after party. And then the Sefer goes on to say what you should do instead of having an afikoman, which also the Mishnah doesn't tell us. It just says, don't have it. It doesn't tell us what you should do instead. The Sefer then says, Chayav adam la'asok b'hilchot ha-pesach kol ha-layla afilu b'ino l'v'in b'no, afilu b'ino l'v'in atzmo, afilu b'ino l'v'in talmido. A person is obligated to learn the law, be occupied with the laws of Pesach all night, even if it's just you and your son, you and just you, no one else, or you and your students. You just have to do it. So that seems to be the replacement for the Afikoman. Instead of having drunken after parties, you should learn Torah, which is a pretty solid replacement in rabbinic tradition. If there's ever a worry about a drunken after party, you're probably going to replace it with learning Torah. This also feels especially relevant for us, given that, you know, the emphasis is on, it doesn't matter whether you know all these laws, it doesn't matter if it's only you learning them, like you have to do it yourself. And this also gets to a sort of a larger distinction between the Tosefta and the Mishnah in the way they think about Seder night. For the Tosefta, it's a much more scholarly endeavor. You're much more, they emphasize the learning of the laws of Pesach. The Mishnah emphasized telling of the story through the passage of Aramiyah of Beit Avi. So that there's slightly different emphases here. So the Mishnah might tell you that you should continue telling the story even by yourself, even if you know the story, and so on. Okay, so that's the example you have in the Tosefta around the same time as the Mishnah. So they explain what might be forbidden about the Afikoman, sort of by the by. Afikoman is obviously itself a Greek word and does mean some kind of after party. But it also seems that early Talmudic scholars knew of the word, knew what it meant as well. So here's another thing, another link for you, if you want to check it out, which is from the Talmud Yerushalmi, the earlier Talmud. And they give a few options about what might be problematic about the Afikoman. My Afikoman, Rabbi Simon b'shem Rabbi Inyane, bar Rabbi Sisi, mine zemer, types of music, the after party band. Rabbi Yossi Amar, mine matika, sweet things, desserts. Shmuel Amar kagon ardile v'guzlaya dechananya bar shilat. Not totally obvious what he means, but these are sort of delicacies, mushrooms and pigeons of Hananya bar shilat. Maybe he was famous for his mushrooms and pigeons, not sure. Yes, so again, they sort of it's clear that these Amore basically know what an Afikoman is, and are sort of telling you sort of what is the most problematic part of the Afikoman and why you're not allowed to have it. The same is true in the other Talmud, in the better known Talmud, the Talmud Bavli, which you can also see basically the same, very similar opinions. My Afikoman, Amarav Shelo Ya'akru Mechavura Lechavura, so that you shouldn't uproot from one group to another group. The problematic part of the Afikoman for him is the fact that the parties would move houses, and you're not allowed to change house in your Pesach. You're not allowed to move group. Once you're in a group, you have to stay in that group. The Pesach has to remain inside that house. So in order to avoid that problem, they just banned the Afikoman totally. Shmuel Amar Kagon Ardilai Li V'Gozlai La'Abba. That's the same, the parallel in the Yerushalmi, the same kind of thing. Mushrooms for me, pigeons for my father. Rav Chanina Bar Shilav Rabbi Yochanan Amar Kagon Tmarim Kalyot Ve'Egozim. That's just literally what the Tosefta said: dates, parched corns, and what's it called, nuts. So the Amoraim here, the early authorities, all seem to know basically what an Afikoman is. But then you get this other variant version of this tradition, which is Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Ein Maftirin Achar Matzah Afikoman. So instead of Achar HaPesach, Shmuel has a tradition that says Achar Matzah. Seems like what Shmuel is trying to say is that because he doesn't do the Pesach sacrifice, he clarifies that this prohibition still applies in a world without the Pesach. You just can't do it after the matzah. But the Talmud decides that this implies that therefore you might be able to do it after matzah according to the Mishnah. So then they go through a whole back and forth, and then you'll see that this whole thing gets reread as Mar Zutra has a variant tradition of Shmuel's tradition. Mar Zutra Matnei Hachi, he used to teach it like this. Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Maftirin Achar HaMatzah Afikoman. Took out the word Ein. So now you have a statement which mandates having after Matzah the Afikoman, after your obligated Matzah. So how did it become Matzah? That's another thing, which is that you wanted to eat the Pesach on, we talked about this earlier in the previous chapter, you couldn't eat the Pesach if you were ravenous. Perhaps they were worried that you might break bones in your haste to eat it. But that's true of general sacrifice as well, that you shouldn't eat them when you're totally ravenous. You should eat them on a satisfied stomach. So therefore, that pushes the Pesach later and later into the meal. And then you might get the idea that you should end the meal with the last taste of your meal should be the Pesach offering. And now that we don't have the Pesach offering anymore, the closest thing you have is matzah. And I think that's partly explains the development there. Okay. What would you call a hotel? Is it one house or many houses? You have separate rooms, we hide in the outside room, so there's a separate house. I think we mentioned this a while ago, the Mishnah sometimes uses the word house as to mean room, like by it something just means room, because for them houses were one word by default, one room. I think as long as you're eating with the that probably counts as one house, yeah. But I'm not sure, you'd have to, I don't know, ask a rabbi. Okay, so that's how the our Mishnah, Ein Maftirin Achar Pesach Afikoman, that's the short version of how it ended up being, in fact, you have to have an Afikoman, and that Afikoman is matzah and not an after party. But what I want to say about this as well is like there's a whole bunch of tensions in the structure of the Seder. One of the tensions is the tension between having a high-end meal and having a sort of solemn affair. Because on the one hand, you need to have wine. It needs to be celebratory. And so you've got to be, you've got to get a bit tipsy because that's, you've got to have fun. That's part of the point. And on the other hand, you've also got to, it's a religious thing. You're reciting Hallel, you're praising God. Like you've got to pay attention to that. You can't like have a drunken after party. So this sort of plays to that tension. So we just finished saying you can drink as much as you want in the meal, and now we're saying, but you can't drink so much. You can't then go on to have a massive party. Okay. David Dow's book says Afikoman is mistranslated from the Greek and is referenced to the risen Messiah. Daniel Boran discussed this. That seems extremely unlikely to me. I think most people believe Saul Lieberman's interpretation, which I can read to you here. When festivities would reach their peak, they would burst into others' homes to force them to join in the continuing party, and they called this epikomatzein. The Mishnah warns this does not conclude the Passover meal with an afikom and epikomazein. This is the interpretation of the Babylonian Israeli Talmud. So, yeah, I think that the Mishnah, again, you'll find a spread of scholarship on this and a spread of opinions. But my view is the Mishnah doesn't know anything about what Christianity is or is engaging in Christianity in any way. It might be engaging with some sort of random heretics who believe in crazy messiahs, but they don't know about Christianity as a complex. So I don't think they would be thinking about the risen Messiah. Okay, so now we're going to do sort of another related question about drinking too much, which is what happens if you all fall asleep? You want to be eating the Pesach with the right intention. You want to, ideally you should be awake the whole time. So now we're going to see what happens when, if you've drunk enough that you end up falling asleep. Yashnu miksatan yochlu. If only some of your group fell asleep, then you can, all of you can continue to eat the Pesach. That's totally fine. The group's Pesach is fine. There were enough people, there were some people in the group who still sort of had intention to eat their Pesach. That's fine. The entire group can carry on. So you can wake them up and they can carry on eating it. But kulan lo yochelu. Got a problem if everyone in the group falls asleep. If so, then you've actually lost your ability to eat this Pesach. You can't eat it. It's no longer, you didn't go in with the right intention. You didn't follow your obligations correctly. You should not continue to eat the Pesach. So watch out. This is much more likely a small Siddurim. So watch out so you don't all fall asleep before you've finished your Seder. Though we don't have to eat the Pesach, so less problematic. But Rabbi Yossi has a different distinction. Well, sort of has a refined distinction on what happens if everyone falls asleep. Rabbi Yossi Omer, nit nam namu yochlu. If everybody just dozed off, sort of like just fell asleep for a second and came back again, then that's fine. That's not enough that's not enough break in the intention of eating the Pesach. But if nir demu, if they all fell into an actual deep sleep, then lo yochel, then you shouldn't eat it. So Rabbi Yossi thinks that the quality or type of sleep or duration of sleep matters, whether it's a sort of a hafzaka, a break in your intention or not. Yes, kids, I'm sure, fall asleep at Seders all the time. I used to have a nap on the afternoon, so I would try and stay up. That was the way my parents dealt with that issue. Okay, the last Mishnah. Does the Mishnah say anything about Chayzei Afikomen? Absolutely not. They do not think of Afikomen in any sense as something that should be hidden. It is something which is totally forbidden to have this after party. The Mishnah says nothing about who should hide the Afikomen. I don't know where the tradition of hiding the Afikomen comes from, but I'm sure someone could do some research and let us know. Okay. Now we're sort of, as we've done the whole way through the Mishnah, we've gone through chronologically, we've now finished the Seder, and now we are worried about the conclusion of the Seder and making sure that you finish the Seder on time. HaPesach achar chatzot metamei et hayadayim. The Pesach sacrifice after midnight makes the hands impure. In other words, this is a way of saying that it is no longer valid to eat. It's no longer a valid sacrifice. You have missed the window. You have to have eaten it by midnight. This, I think, is the origin of finishing the Seder by midnight, or finishing at least the eating part of the Seder by midnight, which is a strong tradition in some circles. That's because of this idea of eating the Pesach before midnight, before it becomes essentially an invalid sacrifice, a leftover sacrifice, which we're about to talk about. Hapigol v'hanotar mutamin et hayadayim. And also, by the way, this is the case for any sacrifice, which is either pigol, which is some kind of invalid sacrifice, or notar, a sacrifice that was left over for longer than its period of eating. So for the Pesach, that's one night. For other things, it's two nights, like the Chagigah, you can eat on the third day, I think. They also make the hands impure. In other words, they are invalid sacrifices. Now, there are, because as we discussed before, there are two sacrifices that you would be eating. You would be eating the Chagigah, and you'd be eating the festive sacrifice, you'd be eating the Pesach. There are different blessings for each of those. They're each sort of obligatory. So, well, not quite obligatory. One of them is obligatory, the other one is optional, but there are mitzvah activities that come with blessings. The question is, if you have done one blessing, but you forgot to do the other one, does your one blessing count for both or not? In other words, is which one is more specific or more general, which you'll see in a second. Irach birkata Pesach, batar et shalazevach. If you blessed the blessing for the Pesach, but you didn't bless the blessing for the Chagigah, don't worry, you don't need to worry about the blessing for the Chagigah, you're done. The Pesach includes the Chagigah, but it seems like the whole night is about the Pesach, so if you only did the blessing for the Pesach, you've covered yourself for both sacrifices. Beirach et shal hazevach, lo patar et shal hapesach, but if you blessed on the, made the Chagigah blessing, and you still need to then make the blessing on the Pesach. That would have been the normal order that you ate it as well, by the way, right? You'd eat the Chagigah first in order that you not eat the Pesach when you're ravenously hungry. So if you did it in the opposite order by chance, you happen to have eaten some Pesach first, and therefore you said the blessing first, there's no need to go on and say the blessing on the Chagigah. That's according to Rabbi Ishmael. But if you did the Zevach, the Chagigah first, which is the normal order, then obviously you should also bless on the Pesach afterwards. But Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva has a different sense of what's going on. Lo zo pateret zo, v'lo zeo pateret zo. Rabbi Akiva thinks that neither blessing exempts the other one. They're both core blessings. They're independent blessings. There's no connection between the two. You have to do one, you have to do the next. Doesn't matter what order you're doing it. Doesn't matter which one's primary. You just have to do one blessing and then the other blessing. Okay. That was it. You can probably hear my son in the background. So Chag Kasher V'Sameach to everyone. It was so lovely to learn Mishnah with you every day. Thank you so much. Good luck kashering, making chicken soup, etc. Yeah, it was wonderful to learn with you.